Chapter 2. Pay me. Seeing this game was such a good one, I became very generous towards my parents, and a capital way it is to encourage liberality in children. I gave Mama a very neat brass thimble, and she gave me a half guinea piece. Then I gave her a very pretty needle book, which I made myself with an ace of spades from a new pack of cards we had, and I got Sally, our maid, to cover it with a bit of pink satin her mistress had given her, and I made the leaves of the book, which I bandaged very nicely, out of a piece of flannel I had had round my neck for a sore throat. It smelt a little of hartshorn, but it was a beautiful needle book, and Mama was so delighted with it, that she went into town, and bought me a gold-laced hat. Then I bought Papa a pretty china tobacco stopper. But I am sorry to say of my dear father, that he was not so generous as my mom or myself, for he only burst out laughing, and did not give me, so much as a half-crown piece, which was the least I expected from him. "Shan't give you anything, Bob, this time," says he, "and I wish, my boy, you would not make any more such presents, for, really, they are too expensive." Expensive indeed. I hate meanness, even in a father. I must tell you about the silver-edged waistcoat which Bunting gave me. Mama asked me about it, and I told her the truth, that it was a present from one of the boys for my kindness to him. Well, what does she do, but writes back to Dr. Swishtail, when I went to school, thanking him for his attention to her dear son, and sending a shilling to the good and grateful little boy who had given me the waistcoat. "What waistcoat is it?" says the doctor to me, "and who gave it to you?" "Bunting gave it me, sir," says I, "call Bunting." And up the little ungrateful chap came. Would you believe it, he burst into tears, told that the waistcoat had been given him by his mother, and that he had been forced to give it for a debt to Copper Merchant, as the nasty little blackguard called me. He then said how, for 3 halfpence, he had been compelled to pay me 3 shillings the sneak, as if he had been obliged to borrow the 3 halfpence. How all the other boys had been swindled, by me in like manner, and how, with only 12 shillings, I had managed to scrape together 4 guineas. My courage almost fails me as I describe the shameful scene that followed. The boys were called in, my own little account book was dragged out of my cupboard, to prove how much I had received from each, and every farthing of my money was paid back to them. The tyrant took the 30 shillings that my dear parents had given me, and said he should put them into the poor box at church, and, after having made a long discourse to the boys about meanness and usury, he said, "Take off your coat, Mr. Stubbs, and restore Bunting his waistcoat." I did, and stood without coat and waistcoat in the midst of the nasty grinning boys. I was going to put on my coat. "Stop," says he. Ache down his breeches. Ruthless, brutal villain. Sam Hopkins, the biggest boy, took them down horse me, and I was flogged, sir. Yes, flogged. Au revenge. I, Robert Stubbs, who had done nothing but what was right, was brutally flogged at 10 years of age. Though February was the shortest month, I remembered it long. March. Showery. When my mama heard of the treatment of her darling she was for bringing an action against the schoolmaster, or else for tearing his eyes out when, dear soul, she would not have torn the eyes out of a flea, had it been her own injury, and, at the very least, for having me removed from the school, where I had been so shamefully treated. But Papa was stern for once, and vowed that I had been served quite right, declared that I should not be removed from school, and sent old Swishtail a brace of pheasants for, what he called his kindness to me. Of these the old gentleman invited me to partake, and made a very queer speech at dinner, as he was cutting them up, about the excellence of my parents, and his own determination, to be kinder still to me, if ever I ventured on such practices again. So I was obliged to give up my old trade of lending. For the doctor declared that any boy who borrowed should be flogged, and anyone who paid, should be flogged twice as much. there was no standing against such a prohibition as this, and my little commerce was ruined. I was not very high in the school. Not having been able to get farther than that dreadful propria quae maribus in the Latin grammar, of which, though I have it by heart even now, I never could understand a syllable. But, on account of my size, my age, and the prayers of my mother, was allowed to have the privilege of the bigger boys, and on holidays to walk about in the town. Great dandies we were too, when we thus went out. I recollect my costume very well. A thunder and lightning coat, a white waistcoat embroidered neatly at the pockets, a lace frill, a pair of knee breeches, and elegant white cotton or silk stockings. This did very well, but still I was dissatisfied. I wanted a pair of boots. Three boys in the school had boots. I was mad to have them too. But my papa, when I wrote to him, would not hear of it, and £3, the price of a pair, was too large a sum for my mother to take from the housekeeping, or for me to pay, in the present impoverished state of my exchequer. But the desire for the boots was so strong, that have them, I must at any rate. There was a German bootmaker who had just set up in our town in those days, who afterwards made his fortune in London. I determined to have the boots from him, and did not despair, before the end of a year or two, either to leave the school, when I should not mind his dunning me, or to screw the money from Mama, and so pay him. So I called upon this man Stiffelkind was his name, and he took my measure for a pair. "You are a very young gentleman to wear top boots," said the shoemaker. "I suppose, fellow," says I, "that is my business and not yours. Either make the boots or not, but when you speak to a man of my rank, speak respectfully." And I poured out a number of oaths, in order to impress him with a notion of my respectability. They had the desired effect. "Hey, sir," says he, "have a nice little pair of top boots that I think will just do for you." And he produced, sure enough, the most elegant things I ever saw. "They were made," said he, "for the Honorable Mr. Stiffney, of the Guards, but were too small." "Ah, indeed," said one. "Tiffney is a relation of mine. And what, you scoundrel, will you have the impudence to ask for these things?" He replied, "£3. "Well," said I, "they are confoundedly dear. But, as you will have a long time to wait for your money, why, I shall have my revenge, you see." The man looked alarmed, and began a speech: "Sir, I cannot let them go without," but a bright thought struck me, and I interrupted her. "Don't, sir, me. Take off the boots, fellow, and, harkee, when you speak to a nobleman, don't say sir." "100,000 pardons, my lord," says he: "if I had known you were a lord, I would never have called you sir. That name shall I put down in my books?" "Name? Oh, why, Lord Cornwallis, to be sure," said I, as I walked off in the boots. "And that shall I do with my lord's shoes?" "Keep them until I send for them," said one. And, giving him a patronizing bow, I walked out of the shop, as the German tied up my shoes in paper. This story I would not have told, but that my whole life turned upon these accursed boots. I walked back to school as proud as a peacock, and easily succeeded in satisfying the boys as to the manner in which I came by my new ornaments. Well, one fatal Monday morning, the blackest of all black Mondays that ever I knew, as we were all of us playing between school hours, I saw a posse of boys round a stranger, who seemed to be looking out for one of us. A sudden trembling seized me. I knew it was Stiffelkind. What had brought him here? He talked loud, and seemed angry. So I rushed into the schoolroom, and burying my head between my hands, began reading for dear life. "I van Lord Cornwallis," said the horrid bootmaker. "His lordship belongs, I know, to dishonorable school, for I saw him with the boys at church yesterday." "Lord who?" "Why, Lord Cornwallis to be sure, a very fat young nobleman, with red hair. He squints a little, and sneers dreadfully." "There's no Lord Cornwallis here," said one, and there was a pause. "Stop. I have it, says that odious Bunting. He must be Stubbs. And Stubbs. Stubbs. Everyone cried out, while I was so busy at my book as not to hear a word. At last, two of the biggest chaps rushed into the schoolroom, and seizing each an arm, run me into the playground bolt up against the shoemaker. This is my man. I beg your lordship's pardon, says he, I have brought your lordship's shoes, which you left. See, they have been in this parcel ever since you went away in my boots. Shoes, fellow, says one. Never saw your face before, for I knew there was nothing for it but brazening it out. Pon the honor of a gentleman, said I, turning round to the boys. They hesitated, and if the trick had turned in my favor, 50 of them would have seized hold of Stifflekind and drubbed him soundly. Stop, says Bunting, hang him. Let's see the shoes. If they fit him, why then the cobbler's right. They did fit me, and not only that, but the name of Stubbs was written in them at full length. That, said Stifflekind. Is he not a lord? So help me Himmel, I never did once think of looking at the shoes, which have been lying ever since in this piece of brown paper. And then, gathering anger as he went on, he thundered out so much of his abuse of me in his German English that the boys roared with laughter. Swishtail came in the midst of the disturbance and asked what the noise meant. It's only Lord Cornwallis, sir, said the boys, battling with his shoemaker about the price of a pair of top boots. Oh, sir, said I, it was only in fun that I called myself Lord Cornwallis. In fun. Where are the boots? And you, sir, give me your bill. My beautiful boots were brought, and Stifflekind produced his bill. Lord Cornwallis to Samuel Stifflekind, for a pair of boots 4 guineas. You have been fool enough, sir, says the doctor, looking very stern, to let this boy impose on you as a lord, and knave enough to charge him double the value of the article you sold him. Take back the boots, sir. I won't pay a penny of your bill, nor can you get a penny. As for you, sir, you miserable swindler and cheat, I shall not flog you as I did before, but I shall send you home. You are not fit to be the companion of honest boys. Suppose we duck him before he goes? Piped out a very small voice. The doctor grinned significantly and left the schoolroom, and the boys knew by this they might have their will. They seized me and carried me to the playground pump. They pumped upon me until I was half dead, and the monster, Stifflekind, stood looking on for the half hour the operation lasted. I suppose the doctor, at last, thought I had had pumping enough, for he rang the school bell, and the boys were obliged to leave me. As I got out of the trough, Stifflekind was alone with me. "Well, my lord," says he, "you have paid something for these boots, but not all. By Jupiter, you shall never hear the end of them." And I didn't. April. Fooling. After this, as you may fancy, I left this disgusting establishment, and lived for some time along with Pa and Mama at home. My education was finished, at least Mama and I agreed that it was, and from boyhood until abadahoyhood, which I take to be about the 16th year of the life of a young man, and may be likened to the month of April, when spring begins to bloom, from 14 until 17, I say, I remained at home, doing nothing for which I have ever since had a great taste, the idol of my mama, who took part in all my quarrels with father, and used regularly to rob the weekly expenses in order to find me in pocket money. Poor soul! Many and many is the guinea I have had from her in that way, and so she enabled me to cut a very pretty figure. Papa was for having me at this time articled to a merchant, or put to some profession, but Mama and I agreed that I was born to be a gentleman, and not a tradesman, and the army was the only place for me. Everybody was a soldier in those times, for the French war had just begun, and the whole country was swarming with militia regiments. "He'll get him a commission in a marching regiment," said my father. "As we have no money to purchase him up, he'll fight his way, I make no doubt. and Papa looked at me with a kind of air of contempt, as much as to say he doubted whether I should be very eager for such a dangerous way of bettering myself. I wish you could have heard Mama screech when he talked so coolly of my going out to fight. Hat. Send him abroad, across the horrid, horrid sea, to be wrecked and perhaps drowned, and only to land for the purpose of fighting the wicked Frenchman, to be wounded, and perhaps killed. Oh, Thomas, Thomas, would you murder me and your boy? There was a regular scene. However, it ended as it always did in mothers getting the better, and it was settled that I should go into the militia. And why not? The uniform is just as handsome, and the danger not half so great. I don't think in the course of my whole military experience I ever fought anything, except an old woman, who had the impudence to halloo out, "Heads up, lobster!" Well, I joined the North Bungays, and was fairly launched into the world. I was not a handsome man, I know, but there was something about me that's very evident, for the girls always laughed when they talked to me, and the men, though they affected to call me a poor little creature, squint eyes, knock knees, redeed, and so on, were evidently annoyed by my success, for they hated me so confoundedly. Even at the present time they go on, though I have given up gallivanting, as I call it. But in the April of my existence, that is, in Anno Domini 1791 or so, it was a different case, and having nothing else to do, and being bent upon bettering my condition, I did some very pretty things in that way. But I was not hot-headed and imprudent, like most young fellows. Don't fancy I looked for beauty. Pish! I wasn't such a fool. Nor for temper. I don't care about a bad temper. I could break any woman's heart in 2 years. What I wanted was to get on in the world. Of course I didn't prefer an ugly woman or a shrew, and when the choice offered, would certainly put up with a handsome, good-humored girl. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.